Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is Ellen Flynn Giles, a member of the Howard County Board of Education. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, what do you have to get us started?
Well, you know, this is under the category of a long time coming. Bland Air Park in Central Columbia, which I guess you call
I'm done with the story. Move on. No, I'm just kidding.
You weren't excited about this story, and I kind of get that. You know, Bland Air has been talked about for, I think it almost goes back to 2000 when we started talking about acquiring this land.
It kind of reminds me of Y2K. You know, we prepared for it for years and years and years and years, and then it came and no one cared.
Yeah. Well, you know, the skinny is that this was a farm. It was owned by a woman named Nancy Smith, who died in 1997, I believe. And when she died without a will, and her heirs went to sell this farm. Now, over the years, she was like the holdout against Rouse. They tried, I think Jim Rouse may have contacted her directly, tried to buy this farm, because it was truly smack dab in the middle of Columbia.
And in fact, 175, I think, bisected her
property.
Bisected
the property, and she fought that. She didn't want that. You know, local lore has it that even after the state condemned it and put the road through and sent her a check, that she never cashed that check. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's the local lore.
She framed it, and it's somewhere in a box.
Well, yeah, but, you know, she lived almost as a recluse on that farm for years. Anyway, make a long story short, shortly after her death, the county got together with some Maryland Open State funds, and the county acquired the farm to be a park. And it will be the second largest park in Howard County after Rockburn. Rockburn's some 400 acres, and I think that Bland Air will be 300, which is...
And it's actually a seven-phase project, and the first will be opening, I think,
late this fall or early spring.
Yeah,
two multi-purpose fields off Oakland Mills Road. You know, some people who drive through there have seen the work going on, but it's been a long time coming. I think a lot of people are happy to kind of see that finally come to fruition. The trick will be, will it be another 10 years before it's completed? And it all, of course, it's all depending upon budget dollars, but pretty exciting thing for Columbia.
It'll be nice to see another park in the community.
It will.
One at which we can't smoke.
There'll be no smoking in Bland Air Park or any park for that matter.
You know, Dennis, you and I have we've had occasion to see each other a number of times this week, and we've debated this issue a little bit. And of course, what we're talking about is County Executive Allman's executive order earlier this week banning smoking from county parks.
You know, I don't know if Rob Roblin covered the event for
a lot of coverage
for Channel 8. Got statewide coverage.
Which, I'm sure that wasn't a calculated motivation on his part.
Do you think the next time they do a survey of likely governor candidates, Ken will be on that list this time?
You mean that list that he didn't make the last
year? Anyway, Rob Roblin does this this coverage of the story, and they had Dr. Peter Bielenson, our Howard County Health Director. I mean, I'm not sure what his title is.
Sometimes I feel like he's like deputy county executive.
You know, he ran for governor or something.
He ran for Congress.
Congress. So, thank you.
That was a sneak preview at our desk.
I guess. Thank you for that. But the funny part for me was, you know, here they're interviewing Bielenson, and they finally, you know, he gets his moment on the camera, and he stumbles on the word smoke. He went, smoke. It was kind of funny.
Well, he hates the word.
Tough word, smoke. It doesn't come out of the health officer's mouth very clearly.
You know, I'm struggling with this.
The nanny state.
I've got a personal crisis on my hands here.
A personal crisis?
Yes, I do.
You're not a smoker?
No, but I like to take positions on things, and I'm sort of a libertarian. I like government staying out of my lives.
Out
of my life. I have many lives. I have nine lives. I'm a cat, actually, in another world. But it's funny because the argument is that only 9 or 10% of Howard County citizens actually smoke.
Yeah.
So it's a minority, because we live in a democracy, the majority actually doesn't smoke, and therefore they presumably don't want to run into smoke when they're hanging out in county parks.
Yeah.
You know what? There are a lot of things that we as a community give to the minority. Healthy Howard. Let's keep it nice and close at home.
Yeah.
Healthy Howard is something we all pay for. To pay for a very small minority, the homeless. The homeless are supported at some level by county funds that we all pay for.
And they don't pay property taxes.
It benefits a small minority. You know what? Here, the minority is a minority that likes to smoke. Maybe they like to go fishing and have a cigar while they're fishing. Really, is it that big a deal?
My only thing, and I'm kind of with you. I'm divided on this one. First of all,
Your lives as well.
All my lives as well
are divided.
I, I get the nanny state thing. Come on, smoking outside? I mean, how many people is that really going to disturb?
I mean, how many parts per million is that smoke really occupying out in an open park?
But I got to tell you, working my way through high school and college, I worked for the Rouse Company picking up trash in Columbia. Cigarette butts are probably the biggest problem that people don't see. I mean, they're all over the place. And I can just see the park littered with them. That part of me says, yeah, no smoking parks, because I don't know a smoker in his... I don't know any smokers that don't flick their butt at the end of the day, particularly if they're smoking in the park, and either into the lake or, you know, they crush it out with their foot and leave it.
So we're legislating something around behaviors that we can't control?
Well, you know, and I think it was...
Sounds like texting and cell phones.
Several people have pointed out, well, you know, littering's already...
It's a problem.
Well, yeah, it's already wrong, so you don't have to legislate it, so... I don't...
Is this really going to cut the budget of the cleanup crew?
Let's face it. What this is about is enhancing Ken's image... statewide. You know, it's going to be tough for a county executive from Howard County to be elected governor of this state. We're the smallest county. We're the richest county. We don't have the urban population. So how do you raise your profile? You do things like this.
And as an aside, I'm sort of curious, and perhaps I should know this as an attorney, but this is being done by executive order?
Edict. It's good to be king.
Well, it's being done by executive order. I'm curious, are there any teeth in this? I mean, what happens? So the article in Explore Howard actually talks about the fact that you get a warning, you're asked to stop, and if you don't stop, you can be asked to leave the park, and if you don't leave the park, you can be fined, I guess, between $500 and $1,000. But the fine isn't for smoking. The fine, I guess, is for...
For refusing to leave?
For refusing to leave.
I don't know. I see enforcement as the big problem here, but that's not what this is about.
So speaking of County Executive Ullman perhaps running for governor, rumor on the street from Tom Cole's blog,
Hoka Rising,
is that he quasi-announced his candidacy for governor at a fundraiser?
I don't know, something at a law firm,
Miles and Stockbridge downtown, and he, I guess, alluded to the fact that...
Are they a Democratic law firm?
Sometimes I feel like the only non-democratic attorney in town.
Is it lonely?
It's so lonely.
It's so lonely.
That's why I have nine lives.
So he wasn't going to announce of course, if he did it in Baltimore, it's a good place to do it because he's going to need Baltimore votes.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I guess it was semi-official. The papers didn't cover it. The only place I saw it covered was Tom's blog, so...
He's really becoming a newsbreaker, news story breaker.
Well, Tom says he doesn't want to be breaking news, but in that case, I think he did. I didn't hear about it anywhere else. And it's the worst kept secret that he's running for governor. You know, if you ask Ken directly, he'll kind of give you the wink. You know, I haven't announced anything yet, but you know, all the things he's doing seems to be laying the groundwork for that run.
Well, he's laying the groundwork for something. I don't think anybody really knows what. And honestly, I think he'd have a better shot to get a statewide position running for something other than governor. But who am I? I'm just a Republican attorney.
And I'm just a podcast co-host.
CA?
Yeah, see, just while we're on.
Who's again?
Yeah, well, Tom Cole again. You know, now we have a blogger on the CA board, which is really interesting. And in his blog this morning on Hoka Rising, Tom talked about a couple of things. One, and he's to be commended for this, I'm one of these, you know, Hoko Loko news geeks that actually... watches the board meetings on the Granicus system, and I watch the county council meetings. And
how are things at home, Dennis? No, I'm just kidding.
As I said, that's kind of indicative of my life, you know. But there is something to be said, rather than having to sit in an uncomfortable chair in a boardroom, as opposed to sitting at home in my office with a glass of wine watching the proceedings. I like that. It sounds like a train is running through here in the mall right now. It's just the FedEx man,
not the UPS guy.
FedEx man. That the CA has finally agreed, I guess, to start audio streaming their meetings. Now, I think this is great. I think that any time we make government meetings, and CA is not a government, but it's kind of quasi-moto in that regard, anytime we make that information more accessible to the public at whole, in general, I think it's good.
You think Alan Dyer was behind this? Different board, I understand.
Yeah, well, you know, he's all about transparency. He's almost the invisible man. I don't even think he's not a Colombian.
I don't think so.
He's an Ellicott Cityan, I believe. So that was one piece of news. The other piece of news coming out of CA's board meeting last night was this move to
you know, the waste more money.
Well, I was kidding with Dave. Bring the band, get the band back together. You know, there are some people in Colombia that think that the anything in the future needs to have the people from the past come in and direct it. You know, there are people that hold this vision of Colombia from the 60s as the way it was always meant to be and should be.
It was a snapshot from Rouse's vision back then.
Yeah, which,
and we now, 30, 40 years later, are supposed to be executing on a vision that existed 30, 40 years ago in a completely different time.
And anybody who studies Jim Rouse knows that he was an evolutionary thinker. He was always changing.
That's what a visionary is.
That's why he went back to the town, to the cities, after doing suburban development. But, no, they...
How many times he's rolled over.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Well,
dizzy.
The CA board has now authorized Cy Palmier, I think Bob Tenenbaum, I think Jervis Dorton, there might be a couple others in this...
Old-timers.
They call
old
them the fabulous... Some board members refer to them as the Fab Five. The Fab Five? I mean, these guys, they were good. Look, they were the great
designers.
You're
just jealous that you're not one of the Fab Five. That's
yeah.
What this is.
Well, that's true. There's that. No, you know, I don't have any problem. I think they're good designers. But I think that if we're going to do this, if we're going to take a look at designing Town Center, let's open it up. There's a lot of good designers out there. Let's throw out an RFP. You know, take a look at Columbia. Get ourselves exposed to the most ideas that we can.
But haven't we already done this? Hasn't GGP already done this?
Well, they have to a certain degree.
And I don't mind them looking at those elements that fall under their purview.
CA's purview.
But why are they looking at things that have already been hashed over and time again?
Well, not only that, but they will be designing things that they'll have no teeth to. I mean, they're going to be proposing design guidelines for things that will be non-CA, so that nobody has to listen to them. It's like, why? Why are we doing this now? What's the hurry?
It's a waste of a lot of money.
And I see this as going beyond the four-month mandate that they've been giving. I just see that it's a kind of a bot. I put it up there with the CA customer service software, which, you know...
Where are we on that?
When's the last time you heard about that? All of a sudden, that went quiet. No, that's still out there. I've never seen a software program take so long to develop in my life. I mean, it's probably right up there, Lake Elkhorn dredging. It's right in the same group.
So speaking of throwing dollars at something that I'm not really sure we need to be throwing dollars at, cops in middle schools.
Yeah.
So I guess the county council... approved a $400,000 addition to the 2012 operating budget for youth services provided by the Howard County Police Department.
Right.
And this is not terribly dissimilar to what was done some, I guess, 11 years ago in the, I think it was about 11 years ago in the high schools. Maybe it was longer than that. But they put police officers into the high schools, not as a means to... prevent crimes or whatever. It was really more, because there was a problem, it was more...
Well, it was. Remember, the reason what prompted this was a Wild Lake High School teacher died of a heart attack after breaking up a fight. Wasn't that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's what kind of got this going. You know, that the teachers weren't equipped to handle those kind of disturbances in the school. So the high school's okay, maybe they saw a need there.
And we can debate that, but that's water under the bridge, and that's done.
It's done.
But now we're doing it in middle school. So this budget, I guess, includes $400,000, which would equate to four officers. Right. They haven't decided which middle schools they're going into. You know, I can't help but wonder, really, do we really need this? Is this an example of maybe parents not doing what they should be doing at home, number one? And number two, is it an issue with administrators and teachers being scared to do what they could and should be doing out of fear of parents coming in and saying, you touched my little Johnny? And I've seen examples of that in my own kid's school.
Well, and there's also, I'm not really sure, I find a little disturbing, but according to Sarah Toth's article in Explore Howard, she said these are going to be armed officers. Now, I guess an officer, whenever they're on duty, they have to be armed, but there's something about having somebody wearing a gun in our middle schools that is just, I don't know, I'm just not comfortable with it. But that being said, for me, one of the funniest things in the article was Jen Tarasa, Councilperson Jen Tarasa's quote.
Isn't she the only member of the county council that has not agreed to be a guest on our show?
She is. She's right up there. She gets the Liz Bobo Award.
Liz Bobo. Because
Liz also has
not
shunned
how
us.
She's going to feel about getting labeled right there with Liz. But.
Probably won't like it, but maybe she'll want to come in and defend herself. But that'd be great. But Jen was quoted in the article. Let me see here. This was, again, Sarah Toth in Explore Howard. Jen was quoted saying, there's a lot of empty free time for these kids during middle school hours. Really?
So if there's a lot of empty middle school time, why not take the $400,000 and put it towards a program to keep them busier?
But really?
That's not what I hear.
I got a middle schooler. I don't see any empty free time in her schedule. But, you know, what do I know?
So working our way from middle school to elementary school.
Elkridge Elementary School was in the news, and they your board had a hearing last night about the new site.
Yes, and it's actually elementary school number 41, because there is an Elkridge Elementary School.
Oh, that's
school
true. Yes, yes, yes.
So it's elementary number 41.
I think this is being referred to as the Duckett's Lane.
That's the site that we're currently looking at.
Yeah, the Duckett's Lane site. And it got some objections last night from people that...
I think six. Is that right?
Yeah.
There were six objections?
Six objections. Right. You know... at the risk of offending even more people in Elkridge, which I seem to have a habit of doing, you can't do anything in Elkridge without getting cackles from those. I mean, that is one of the most unagreeable group of people I've ever run into in the county. So these six people who showed up there at the board meeting, they don't want an elementary school in their backyard.
But I think in fairness, you need to kind of take a step back and tell the story leading up to this location being identified.
Well, the school system used to own the site. And Dr. Sidney Cousins determined it was not a suitable elementary school site. Now, there's lots of reasons for that. Back when he did that, we thought elementary schools needed to be on 20 acres. And now I think some of the thinking is that we can go up two stories. We can, you know, there's a look, land's at a premium in this county. So, you know, you can't always find a 20-acre site.
Okay, so they sold that site, and then they picked up another site.
Yes, they picked up Coca-Cola Drive.
Right, which was located too close to the proposed CSX intermodal site.
Intermodal, right.
So there,
and also, even before the intermodal was announced, there were people saying, that site's too close to a railroad track.
You know what? My kids go to Tri-Delphi Elementary School. Or my kids did go to Tri-Delphi Elementary. My daughter started middle school. It's right there next to Route 32. You know what? In my experience, teachers in Howard County, administrators in Howard County, they're not letting kids just run off and go play on railroad tracks or on Route 32. Really?
I bet you more kids get hit by cars than they do by railroad trains.
Right. So. There's actually only been one accident along that stretch in the last 30 years.
On the railroad
track. And it didn't involve children, and it didn't involve cars. It involved a train.
This is a good time to introduce our guest. You want to do that?
Sure. Who's our guest?
This lovely lady sitting between us.
So our guest today is Ellen Flynn Giles, who is a current member of the Howard County Board of Education, serving,
I'm coming in the end of my second term.
Final year. Oh. And you were the chair of the board.
I was the chair before.
Two years ago?
I was the vice chair 2 years ago.
And then chair last year.
3 years ago for 2 years, and then I was the chair last year. So I came out of the chairmanship at the end of December.
And now you're just a member.
Now I am a member like everyone else on the board, yes.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, Ellen, you are not just a member of the board, but you've got a lot of experience in the school system. You've had, two kids go all the way through?
I've had four kids go
four
all the
kids
way
go
through.
Four kids go all the way through. One of them is sitting
one
right here.
One of them is sitting right here. Yes, she is. Okay. And two of my children are now teachers. Two of my boys are now teachers.
In the Howard County school system?
Not in the Howard County school system. I'm still working on that.
She's trying to pull some strings. Can't quite pull it off.
No, I'm trying to work on that.
Well, you know, there's some people in Elkridge say we can't attract good teachers to...
I think we do a wonderful job in attracting good teachers to Howard County. We get 5,000 applicants for 120 positions.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And
all right.
Go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, so before we get too far into some substantive issues, I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding or maybe a lack of understanding on the part of at least some of our listeners and I think the citizens at large. You run for your position.
We run at large, nonpartisan.
Okay. So it's nonpartisan, yet you end up having Republicans, Democrats alike, and you run countywide.
Yes.
So it's not for districts within the school system.
So as opposed to a county council person who really has to get, you know, appeal to a district of about 50,000 voters, you've got to reach 200 or 300,000 people in the county.
Right, and I believe that was actually the subject of a task force I served on about 10 years ago in looking at how we wanted the board to be composed. And at that time, there was a recommendation to move the terms were 6 years, and we recommended they move down to four. And part of the reasoning behind that was to look at people who were still gainfully employed and able to maybe make a four-year commitment. But also the prospect of a second four-year commitment was not as daunting as the prospect of 12 years. If you're trying to figure out a way to make and balance those multiple things. But there was strong support for it to maintain to stay at large. Because of the need to think of this as a school system, we don't really work evenly out into districts in terms of the schools. Children live on one side of 29 and go to schools on the other side of 29. An example, a case in point, is Mount Hebron High School is principally in District 5, which is Greg Fox's district, but is principally served by students from District 1, Courtney Watson's.
That's
so whose school? So whose school is that? Who advocates for what? So what we're trying to do is make sure that we look at the system as a whole and make decisions that take all of those things into consideration and balance them.
So let me ask you this. Out of respect to you and many of your fellow board members that have tremendous experience in the education system, does it really come down to a popularity or name recognition contest? Or do citizens that vote for members of the board vote substantively for the experience that you have, your background, your service on PTAs and other task forces?
I think they do. I have to thank the League of Women Voters for doing as good a job as they do in promoting the forums so that the issues actually get out there and are circulated in a way that people can process them and understand what those issues are.
Well,
I mean, 64 cents of every dollar, tax dollar, goes
to the school system.
Well, it goes to the school education, which is the library, the community college, and the school system together.
But in your election, how many votes did you receive total? Last election.
Well, since you can cast votes for, depending on, since we're on a staggered system, you can vote for three or four
right.
people. I got something between 50,000 and 60,000 votes.
50 and 60. Okay. So about what a council district represents.
Actually, more than most council districts.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right. That's a higher number than I thought.
Now, one of the things that we do that we put in place in order to try and address some of the issues about how do you get to know the whole county,
right.
most of us know the place that we came from and where our children went through, is that we have a cluster assignment rotation through the school board, that each school board member takes a high school in the schools that feed that, and for the course of a year, they kind of attach themselves a little bit more to that school to make sure, the schools, to make sure that they're attending events there, that that's a contact point for people that have issues. So as you rotate through that, you bring a better appreciation for the different neighborhoods, for the old schools versus new schools, renovations, changes in curriculum.
What cluster are you in right now?
Right now, I'm in the Athelton-Oakland Mills cluster. So,
okay.
They're actually deliberately separate from one another. So you're looking at maybe different parts
sure.
of the county. And so I awarded diplomas at Oakland Mills
uh-huh.
and Athelton. I was able to take part in PTA meetings. I went to the Spring Fair and Fling at Cradle Rock.
Okay.
I did the simulated congressional hearings at all my elementary schools. You try to just
now, do all the elementary schools doing simulated congressional hearings now?
All but, I think we're down, I think there's only seven that aren't yet. We've increased it every year.
That's a great program.
So this year, of the 40 elementaries, I think we had 33 were doing it. So we keep advancing every year. And it's one of my favorite things to do.
It's a neat program. I had an opportunity to participate in it this year. A lot of fun. Yeah. So tell me this, bringing on new board members, you get elected, and you know, it reminds me of my partner Mike Davis, who ran Chuck Ecker's campaigns. And Chuck Ecker got elected, and the first day he called Mike and he said, "All right, so we won, so now what?" And you know, it kind of reminds me of that. So here you get elected to the school board. Is it a lot of work to get up to speed on what your job really is, what your job really isn't?
Or do you have new members coming in thinking, I know what this is all about?
Well, I think you have that any place, but I think that we make a deliberate attempt to help transition that. MABE, which is the Maryland Association of Boards of Education, has a formal education program that every board member participates in. But actually, when Mary Kay Sigety and Diane Michaelis were on the board, they helped develop a modular training program for board members. So considering when you come on in December, the first big thing that you really start looking at is the budget. And so,
welcome aboard.
Yeah. And just the distinctions between capital and operating is sometimes something that it takes people a while to catch up on. And so one of the modules that we introduce in January is to try and bring people up to speed on the budget process and how that works and how we interact with the county council and what the role of the county executive is in that and where we really can go with the budget. What are the requirements for us?
And do you find that some board members, even though there are certain parameters within which you're supposed to operate, your job is confined to certain decisions,
yes.
that they have a tendency to want to push that envelope and engage in in decisions or debate over things that really fall outside of the board's purview?
I think people that get elected...
I'm not baiting you.
No. I think people run to make a difference. And so I think it's hard when you start not to feel like I should start right off making changes that will make things better.
Well, I think that we had two new board members came in this time that had a kind of, they had an attitude that there's dysfunction, that the board wasn't operating properly. So, I think there was an anti-board feeling with some of the people that were elected that came in to kind of sweep in some new changes.
I think there's a misconception about it. I think the board gets accused sometimes of rubber stamping. And I think that's a misunderstanding of what the role of the board really is. We set the policy and the broad objectives for the board. We set the goals of the superintendent.
Right.
It's the superintendent's responsibility to bring forward to us the actions that will cause those objectives to be met.
Anytime I hear somebody say that the board is a rubber stamp for that tells me they have never sat in on a board meeting or watched any deliberations.
I can say honestly that nothing we have ever done has gone through without lots of discussion.
Conversations.
Lots of discussion. And I think those discussions are important. And I can honestly say that I have never come to a meeting absolutely, completely, 100% positive of where I'm going to be on a particular issue. And I certainly don't poll the other members. I come anticipating that discussion. I do my homework. I know where I may stand on it, but I still have questions. And I expect to learn from the discussion. And I may go in a different direction or may be reinforced in what I thought originally. Or we may all decide that there are questions that need to be sent back and resolved before we take action. But I think those discussions are important. But I think you also have to understand that our staff is the school system staff.
Right.
And so they are the experts in the delivery of instruction, in the designing of curriculum, in the evaluating of principals and administrative staff. And so recommendations come to us from the superintendent, and we act on those.
It's not terribly different than a lot of the nonprofits in town, where you
Absolutely.
Have a board of directors that strategically recommends to, at a high level what the organization should and shouldn't be doing, but the executive director or president of that organization is, in fact, the one that's executing the wishes of the board.
Well, I mean, if the superintendent is meeting the expectations that we have set, then what he brings to us should be what we want to approve.
I was just going to shift gears to superintendent.
We're looking for a new one.
We're looking for a new one. You want to walk us through what that process is and where we are and what you expect the timeframes to be?
What we will do is that we met and established the basic RFP parameters, and we'll confirm those in August for a search firm to help us in doing the search. That should probably end up with those searches, requests, and things going forward in October, which means that by about February, we should be prepared to make a decision that would be somebody who, February, March, for somebody who will be prepared to come in the 1st of July, which is when the terms end. What people don't always understand is that the parameters for a superintendent are set within COMAR. You have to meet the requirements.
COMAR, Paul, you want to elaborate?
Oh, Code of Maryland Regulations,
there you
sorry.
Go.
It's in statute, and the code specifies that a superintendent or an assistant superintendent, anybody at that level, must be a certificated instructor at either the pre-K, elementary, or middle school level, must hold certification as an administrative in administration, must have actual teaching experience of 3 years or more, and must have also experience in the administrative realm of 3 years or more.
So when Alan Dyer mentioned that he wanted to kind of go outside of the box and look for somebody kind of non-traditional for a superintendent, do you think he was aware of that?
I'm not sure. I think that to go outside of the box when...
Speaking for Alan Dyer is always a difficult thing. I understand that.
I think what we want to do is make sure that...
He wanted a non-traditional candidate.
Well, I think we all want to make sure we get the best possible candidate, and that means not being too restrictive on where we're willing to work.
Right.
I'm not sure that Malibu to Prince George's County was the best choice, right. And I still have some wonders about... Stamford, Connecticut, and Montgomery County, very differently sized systems run right. in different ways. the average size of a school system in the United States is less than 1,000 students. We're 50,000 students.
Is that right? It's the average size of less than 1,000?
Right. And so we tend to be in the middle range, but there's a huge jump. States like Pennsylvania, Texas, Delaware have hundreds of school districts. We have 24.
Well, I would think that our school system is a highly desirable place.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
For this is going to be a superintendent to want to come. Uh-huh.
And I also think there's some advantages to being one of 24 districts where we have a... We really have peer counties that we can build off of and
right.
work when we go towards something on the state level. We're not,
of course, they're not really peer counties because only one of them got a one of them also got a perfect grade from Sunshine Review.
Thank you for that.
I
Very
had
nice.
You know, I watched last night. You announced that the Howard County School System, one of only two.
Another slow night in Dennis's life.
There you go. One of only two systems in the state to
yes.
receive a perfect grade from Sunshine Review. Can you tell us, Sunshine Review, what is this?
Well, they are looking at transparency in government, and they analyzed government websites. And actually, in addition to the A+, we're one of 100 government websites that were recognized in the country as being exemplary for providing information to the populace on the information that deal with them.
So let me get this straight. We have particularly one board member, Alan Dyer, who's, I hate to say only issue, but his main issue is transparency in the school system. The board isn't transparent enough in its dealings. And yet here an independent agency, national,
yes,
has basically said, you guys can't get any better.
Well, I think we can always get better.
I'm not an attorney involved in this litigation, but I think I just found Exhibit A.
Yeah, you can always get better, but A-plus is pretty damn good. Now you sound like my mother. Can do better than A-plus.
Well, I mean, we're very... Well, actually, my mother, too. She's an English teacher.
Well, you know, in Howard County, you can get more than a 4.0, so...
Only on a weighted average.
Whatever.
But I think what it shows is that, especially in the last, I'm going to say, 5 to 10 years, we've really worked... to try and make more things open. I mean, the board doc system that we use, that's the paperless meeting, virtually everything, even the PowerPoints that are presented at the meetings are available before the meeting in order to take a look at.
The tools are there for anybody who wants to see.
If you want to find things, the search capability within the system lets you look at our current policies, what's pending, to make comment on those so that everything is housed in the same place. And I think that was a deliberate effort. Yes, we may have had some of these things available, but you might have had to work a little harder to find them. So I think it's constantly of interest to us to try and make things available to people in the way they think, in the way they might try to find them, so that there's a relationship between the decisions they're going to have to make and the information that they have available to help them make those.
But let's be honest about this, too. Decisions by bodies are not best made in open meetings. They're not. I mean, I think people tend to posture in open meetings, whether you're talking about a nonprofit board, a county council. Decisions are best made, deals are best brokered in a setting other than an open meeting. And it doesn't mean that you don't want to be open and frank and honest with your constituents, but I think real deals are brokered and made in settings other than open meetings where people
agree.
Put
I agree.
On
I think an open meeting is one of the least honest meetings you can have.
But I do think that's one of the reasons why statute provides for reasons why you do meet in closed session. You meet in closed session when there are issues involving personnel, when there are issues involving site acquisition, when there are issues involving other areas that are protected.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think it's just decisions that are made in executive session, you know, sort of a pick on the nonprofit model. Yes, there are decisions and things that should be discussed in executive session because they're inappropriate to discuss in public. But I think there are issues that are rightly addressed in public where public opinion should be collected and gathered and constituents should have an opportunity to be heard. But it doesn't mean that the ultimate decisions or discussions about that decision are always going to happen in an open setting.
Yeah, true.
Well, I think for a lot of us, the decisions, the discussion we've had has sort of been in our own heads, in the documents that have prepared us, in the meetings we've gone to, in what we try to do to engage the public before those decisions are made. I mean, one of the things we generally always do in a work session is to make sure that addressed in the work session are questions that came before us, either through email or through direct testimony or whatever, to try and make sure that all bases are covered. And you can understand that those things were considered. What I think people have a problem with understanding when they talk about the voice of the public being heard, or they say, you know, to me, it's sort of like God didn't answer my prayer. Yes, he did. The answer was no. Okay.
I mean, he, very good.
You know, they,
I get that a lot.
You know, you heard, you know, you were heard. It was considered. You were heard. It was considered. But this is where we now came down.
Welcome to the mall. We do this in the mall. We get a lot of sound effects there in the background.
Okay.
Go ahead, Paul. You have one more thing?
I was going to shift gears.
I was going to shift gears because, well, you know, we're kind of getting to the end.
You know. I'm not done yet.
Well, I want to know. Your term is up in 2012.
In 12, yeah.
I always like to know. Are you going to run again?
Yes, I am.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. I think...
you can ask her for what she's going to run?
I forgot that. Governor?
My sites are where I currently am.
There's enough people from Cary County running for governor right now anyway, so... you're going to run for election to the board?
I am. I think, to be honest, I think that preparing the next generation is one of the most important things that we do. And it truly is the economic driver for the county. Everything that we do really does depend on how well-educated our populace is. And the Founding Fathers said that in order for democracy to survive, you had to have an educated citizenry.
But you talk about how well-educated our populace is. But, you know, it's hard enough in this county to walk up to the average citizen. We could grab a microphone, walk here in the mall, and ask somebody if they live in Howard County, and then ask them who their county council person is. I bet you there's less than...
I actually tell people those kinds of answer those questions all the time.
There's less than 10% people, chance that they would know who the county council.
Well, now, people call me and ask me to fix the traffic on Elchester Road. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and so I send them to the appropriate person to talk to about the traffic on Elchester.
You don't call your husband and get a ladder. And, yeah.
No, and actually, when the speed light cameras came out, we got solicitations from people selling speed cameras. I'm saying we aren't buying the speed cameras; they're going in school zones. This is a county. County issue.
So let's talk about this well-educated population that we have. No left child, no child left behind. No
or left, or left inside either.
No left-handed inside. Child.
Was legislation that created certain national standards that had to be met. There are a lot of people out there that think that that legislation was bad legislation, and what it has forced teachers to do is teach to the test. And rather than teaching high-level things that everyone should know, like where Russia is or Madagascar is, as we were talking about before the show, what they really learn is how to pass a test. So that Howard County scores are good, so Ken Ullman can run around saying that we've got great scores, and so that this engine that we have, as you called it, this economic engine, drives businesses and people to Howard County. Yes, we're well educated, but how well educated are we really?
Well, I think one of the things I wanted to... Every teacher uses tests in order to... I mean, there's no way to gauge that students are performing. Maybe the kind of test or the way in which you choose to test, but assessment is the only way you determine whether or not learning is taking place and that you can measure that that's actually taking place. I do think that one of the things that happened with No Child Left Behind is that we did stop being able to ride on a global number of X percent and had to start looking at individual groups and how they were performing. Statistically, because I'm a statistician kind of person, I'm an editor and analyst in energy. Okay, so what I do is mostly numbers. I find it difficult to say we would compare this group of second graders to another group of second graders and say that that somehow shows that we're doing something. So the 2014 deadline for 100% proficiency in math and English is now being tempered by the Common Core and Race to the Top, where we're going to actually look at individual student growth and talk about how a student has grown.
Now
that's going to be difficult to do.
That 100% proficiency is a Howard County.
Oh, no. That's nationwide.
That's a nationwide.
The NCLB, ESEA, which is the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, has not been reauthorized, so the NCLB standards still hold in place. And according to those, by 2014, we are to be at 100%, which is why when you measure the annual yearly progress every year, it's always going up. The bar is always raising. You can't just increase by 2%. You have to reach another standard. And as we get closer and closer to 2014, which is only 3 years away.
Well, right now, Howard County is like 90-some percent.
We're in the 90s, but there are groups that are not performing at the same level. Right. And so it's getting more and more difficult for every system to get to that level. Because, again,
that last 5% is killer.
Well, I mean, it's like losing that last 5 pounds or whatever. You know, you sort of you sort of stabilize, and then anything incrementally beyond that gets harder and harder to do. And we're still dealing with the fact that we have people coming into the system at 16, 17, 18 who are going to have to meet a standard. Some of them don't speak English. Some of them haven't been in educational situations for a long time.
Kind of reminds me of that line from Cool Hand Luke. Some people you just can't reach.
But we're going to do our best to reach everybody that we can. And one of the things also is that when we talk about leaving, being proficient, we're talking about being college and career ready. And one of the things that we've made great strides in, which I don't think people always recognize, is the career and technology academies and the opportunities that are available for students to do senior practicums where they're actually in the workforce, where they're actually out there in order to understand what these skills and these this accomplishments are going to help them reach. And so we've got kids going out being EMTs. We just approved a new GIS certification under Homeland Security. Our cybersecurity kids are going to be recognized by the governor next week. Glen Elk, for the first time, participated in the ProStart Culinary competition and finished third.
They got a great jazz band, too.
Well, but if you haven't seen a teenager break down a chicken...
Yeah,
in 30 seconds, I mean, it's great.
Well, that sounds a little foul to me.
But trying to make sure that what we're doing is providing students with the skills for them to open any number of doors. And in most cases, you're going to move out to some level of additional training, whether that's apprenticing, whether that's in a community college, whether that's, you know, in a university, that's where it goes. But that's what we need to prepare kids for. Is that whole range of opportunity that's out there to be successful.
So we're getting the high sign from our producer that we're running out of time, but I do have one other topic I want to address real quickly. Speaking of races to the top, I want to talk about Race to Nowhere.
Ah.
We had previously addressed this issue on our show, and I'm just curious, from the Howard County Public School System's perspective, are we pushing kids, not just academically, but with sports, this need to keep kids constantly occupied, constantly doing something? Yes, it helps keep them from being latchkey kids. It helps from keeping kids out of trouble. It should be helping keep those four cops out of the middle school. But have we gone too far the other way?
I think we need to reassess what it is we really want and what we think makes a successful individual and how we want, where we want to be. But what makes us happy, what makes us feel fulfilled, and how does that transfer off into our children? I have this sort of theory that, to a certain extent, we're now dealing with our children as if we're all divorced, and the amount of time you have with your child is this significant time that has to matter, when lots of things that you learn that are important are the things that are just being together, that are just doing something that doesn't necessarily have an objective,
a
that
curriculum
has to have been planned out ahead of time. How do you learn to be a man? How do you learn to be a good woman or mother?
No,
I mean, some of that is watching helping mow the grass.
Don't
or
do what
something.
I do.
It's not necessarily having to play things. I do think structured things are important. I think children need structure in order to be successful. They need to push against that a little bit. But I think we need to maybe reevaluate what is really important and what is going to make a difference. And maybe they need to do fewer things and do them better, as opposed to trying to scatter in 16 different directions and help learn. I think experiences are important because very few of us are doing what we train to do. I mean, I'm a linguist by training. I speak six languages. I'm a specialist in medieval. What I do is all mathematics and analysis. And so I think I bring some of the capabilities that are associated with language to that, but I think we end up doing things that end up where things just happen to mesh together. Somebody said luck is where preparation meets opportunity. Hmm. So if we prepare students to take opportunity and that they're not afraid to take those risks and try those new things, I think those are maybe the best skills we can teach them.
I'm going to have to check her notes after the show because that was her third quote.
There's some good stuff here. We're luck meets opportunity. I like that.
On that note. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
It was great to have you. Good luck in 2012.
Thank you very much.
With whatever you run for.
That about wraps up yet another episode of And Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scowney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, for making us look good on the internet, and to General Growth Properties in the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We're going to take a summer break for the next few weeks and then return with our next show on August 12th. Our guest will be embattled school board member Alan Dyer. Until then, we hope everyone stays cool, uses lots of sunscreen, and tunes in again with us in mid-August.